Golf. Since 1979, Pete's Golf has been practicing the art of club fitting and has been selected as a top 100 club fitter by Golf Digest magazine. At Pete's Golf, we use the best technology available to create an exceptional fitting experience for every customer that walks into our store. Visit PetesGolf.com or call 516-248-6891. That's 516-248-6891 and get your next set of clubs fit for you.
All right, we're back. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia. I'm Anthony, he's Steve, and on the line is PGA Tour winner and Fox Sports analyst Brad Faxon. Brad, how are you doing this morning?
Good, how are you?
Doing fantastic. I want to start with the, I don't know how much you quarter the introduction, but it just seems to me that you've played on the PGA Tour, you're a multiple time winner. The level of play amongst the young kids, Steve was talking about a kid who in the New York State Championship goes, 1-2-1 in the, or 2-1-1.
2-1-1,
yeah. 2-1-1 in the state championship. We had a kid, a 16-year-old, shoot 61 a couple weeks ago. And then we had a rising junior at the, I don't know if you saw this on the internet, but a kid in the Dogwood Invitational at Druid Hills in Atlanta shoot 57. I mean, yeah. goes out in 30 and comes in 27.
That's not a pitch and putt, right?
No,
it's like real golf.
I don't have a par three scores that show up like that. I'm just curious what your opinion is. Can you fathom the amount, the level of talent these young kids are displaying in these last, over the last decade?
No, it's really changed, and I think what's changed the most is there's so many of them all over the country, all over the world, really. And it comes from the developmental junior programs, the AJGA, where kids can play tournament golf year round, and they specialize earlier. And when you see somebody shoot a score of 57, it lights up the social media. And if you're a golfer, you're like, holy smokes! And you want to see the scorecard, what yard is he's playing? No, it's tremendous.
Yeah, it's just to me, it's incredible to think that there's a thing in golf where you can't, or it just I think in professional sports, and you would know this, you just can't be afraid to be successful. I know that Faraday always talks about this, about how he was afraid to be successful, and that's part of why he kind of got out of golf. But these young kids are just absolutely fearless. It's amazing.
It really is. I work for Fox Sports, and we did cover the qualifying day, the longest day in golf, the 36-hole qualifier for different sectional qualifiers all over the country. And you see some names you've never heard of, and you see some scores that you can't believe are shot. And this is what's great about the U.S. Open, that the qualifying can come. It's truly open. There's 78 spots, I believe, that players are vying for. And you said it. I listened to your opening about the scores guys will shoot on these courses to get in, and what they have to shoot to get in, and to shoot 9-under to barely make it in a qualifier for two rounds. It's impressive.
Yeah, I mean, some of these qualifiers are like web.com events where if you're not going low, you don't have a chance
at all. And I'm looking at the tee times for Thursday, Friday for the pairings, and there's so many great pairings already. So many great stories. There's young guys that get thrown into the mix here, and there's a kid that plays for Oklahoma State named Austin Eckroat. He made it through the qualifier in a playoff, and now he's playing with Alexander Noren and Charles Hallett. And I don't know if these guys are ever going to have any idea what's going to hit them in the face until they stand on that first pebble beach.
We're talking to Fox Sports analyst and 8-time PGA Tour winner Brad Faxon. Piggybacking on what we've been talking about as far as the youth, the thing that impresses me the most is not just how well they score, but of course how far they hit the ball. But what equally impresses me is their composure, their sportsmanship. I've yet to see. I mean, we've been following. We watched the NCAAs from a couple of weeks ago, and of course we watch a lot of amateur events. These players never step out of line. They're polished when they're being interviewed. It really is amazing to be that young, to be that talented, but also to be that cognizant of what kind of a person you have to be.
Well, I gotta say, I've seen some guys step out of line. I've seen mm-hmm. some guys that are way better in interviews than others. It's, you know, I think a lot of it's dependent on their upbringing, their parents, their, you know, maybe their coaches on how they do this stuff. But the junior programs and the amateur game is fantastic. And being an analyst for Fox Sports, when we get the contract to do the U.S. Open, a lot of people forget we get to cover the U.S. junior boys, the U.S. amateur, the U.S. mid-amateur. So we're seeing fantastic golf at the junior level, and guys that are, you know, literally at 17 or 18 years old, some of the best players in the country already. And like you said, it's a power game now. It's a game that a lot of the old-timers don't like. You know, it's how can they hit it so far? The game's ruined. These courses are they're outdated right now, and I don't buy it. I think the new game is as good as it can be. I think there's more storylines now and for this U.S. Open at Pebble Beach than you can imagine. It's really exciting.
Well, you just mentioned the types of games people playing and what maybe traditionalists, how they feel about the new game. But let's just jump back then to a week ago and the Country Club of Charleston, where you had a Seth Rayner golf course. You had the best women professional golfers in the world playing. It seemed to me the perfect marriage between golf course, conditions, and talent level all rolled into one. If you're a golf purist, you had to have loved what you saw last week. I know I did, especially seeing a Seth Rayner golf course being played as it was intended to be played. Well, I'm just curious of your thoughts on that last week.
Well, for us, the USGA, no matter what the competition is, whether it's the men's open, the women's open, or the junior boys or the junior girls, they go to great golf courses.
Yep.
And I think the women's game, the championship for the U.S. Women's Open, they do best in a little bit smaller cities like Charleston last week or mm-hmm. Birmingham, Alabama the year before at Shoal Creek. And they get good crowds, and it's the most diverse field you could ever imagine. And when you get on a golf course like Country Club of Charleston, a renovated Seth Rayner that's just beautiful and hard, it's difficult. And a lot of times when the USGA sets up golf courses for championships, they don't want to make a mockery of the players, but they want to see who the best golfer is. And that doesn't include just hitting the ball from A to B or being a great chipper and putter, but you got to think your way around the golf course. When you play a course like Seth Rayner that is so strategic, it's important to know the golf course. And I was amazed at how few players played more than 9 holes a day to get to know the golf course. And I think that really showed on Sunday when the hole locations got close to the edge, where the side of the fairway you hit the ball in and off the tee made a big difference. And the wind came up and it firmed it out. And it was a tough last 9 holes to broadcast because the golf was less than A+.
Right.
And everybody struggled coming in. If a player got off to a fast start, Jarena Pillar, she got to 500, bogeyed 2 of the last 4 holes, I believe.
Yeah.
Even the champion Lee Six, she bogeyed 2 of the last 3 holes. It was impossible. And the French woman that I followed around, Celine Boutier, I was following the last group. She had a chance to birdie the last hole to tie, and she made double. So everything was tough to watch. But I think that's what the USGA wanted to do, is to bring out somebody that had controlled their entire game, and that includes their emotions too, and that's the one part that, you know, the spectator or the average golfer sometimes doesn't understand.
I agree. I think that that's the one component that the USGA, that people fail to recognize, to reiterate, is the fact that they want your attitude to be tested, and that's part of the, I mean, we just saw it on the was it Cantlay? It was on social media talking about he put dropping balls in the rough and off of I can't remember which hole at Pebble Beach, and he was talking about how you can't see the ball, and you know, and you can almost just scratch him right off the list because that's what the USGA wants. They want you thinking about those penalty areas right off the get-go.
Well, I you're going to laugh. I talked to Cantlay yesterday.
Okay.
He lives down there where I live, and I said, look, you're going to win an award for acting here. He said it really wasn't that bad, but you could tell from the sound that it was very windy, and he was dropping it off the edge of the green, pretending that he was losing a golf ball. He said the course was set up very fairly, but there were spots like that,
right,
where you could be just off the edge of the green, and you'd be in tough shape. So I can't wait to get there and to cover this event.
Yeah, we can't wait to watch it, but we're going to take a short break. More with Brad Faxon. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia.
We promise to do our best and to help yours with the introduction of tools like the Geotech Insight platform and products like Droplex Extra. We are advancing the industry to new levels, allowing you to manage your time and budget more efficiently. Visit WinfieldUnitedPro.com to find a representative near you today. Winfield United, a proud sponsor of the Long Island Golf Course Superintendents Association.
Owning the latest and greatest golf equipment makes no difference if it's not fit perfectly for your game. At Mizuno, we create irons and woods for all skill level golfers, from our MP18 family, featuring three different models designed for the better player, to our JPX family, featuring three different models designed to give you distance and forgiveness. We have a model for everybody. Visit Pete's Golf Shop and get custom fit for a set of Mizunos today.
All right, we're back. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia. Pleased to be joined by Brad Faxon. Brad, so you mentioned a little nice natural segue into the U.S. Open next week. I'm just curious what are you excited most about? Obviously, you've got a tremendous venue in Pebble Beach, an exciting field, a lot of the top players playing very well. What are you looking forward to the most next week?
Well, there's an array of headlines that could keep anybody interested. Koepka. Three chance to win three U.S. Opens in a row. It hasn't happened since, Curtis Strange in 88 and 89, and we learned who Willie Anderson was. And Curtis, who's on our broadcast team at Fox, made a point that, as tough as Koepka is, it's going to be extremely difficult for him to just not pay attention to the chance to make history. And Curtis said everywhere he went, and Curtis had the same tough-minded head that Koepka's displaying to us, mm-hmm, in record fashion, that it was really a distraction to him. So Koepka, seeing what he can do at Pebble Beach will be incredible to watch. Tiger Woods being the Masters champion this year, showing some great signs his last round at Memorial, will be a huge story for us. I'm looking at tee times. We're going to cover his every single move on Thursday afternoon into prime time back in the East Coast. That'll be exciting to watch. Can Phil Mickelson somehow pull a rabbit out of his hat and win a U.S. Open finally on a course that he's had an unbelievable amount of success on? And, despite his craziness on Twitter all of a sudden, it's remarkable to watch what's happened to him. But, you've seen it kind of a sudden resurgence of Jordan Spieth on leaderboards, which has been really, nice to watch. Dustin Johnson, who's been the number one player in the world most of the last couple years anyway, and Koepka's buddy, has had, great success too at Pebble Beach. I think he's motivated. He had a chance to win back there in 2010. Can this be, a player like Rory McIlroy, who's got off to a blazing start this year? Can he contend? And Patrick Cantlay, a guy that dominated at Muirfield Village, who's one of the best players, all around best players. And then can Justin Rose find his game? There's so many cool things that are happening here. It's hard to touch them all.
Brad, you brought up something very interesting that's always strikes my curiosity. When the USGA uses a venue that's a regular tour stop, so Pebble Beach, obviously, as everybody knows who follows golf, is always the national program in February. And I'm always curious, obviously the setup is different because when the USGA comes, It's the same. Obviously, it's the same golf course, but it's not the same golf course. But I'm also curious how Pebble plays in June versus how Pebble plays in February.
Well, there's going to be a couple huge differences between what the viewer sees at the old Crosby, the AT&T, the Pro-Am in late January, early February. That the course is much softer for a few reasons. Number one, it's the rainy season, obviously. The course is set up for mostly for the amateur golfer, so the fairways are wide, the greens are receptive. The golf course has been, in the last 10 to 15 years, in much better condition when the big amateur group led by Arnold Palmer bought Pebble Beach, and they've put it in a fantastic condition year-round, and it never used to be. The greens were always extremely spiked up and chewed up, but the USGA will set the course up where these players have no idea what they're going to see the first time. The fairway lines are moved all over the place, insignificantly, and they did have a rainy spring, so the rough is thick. And there's been a lot of talk about, from the player side, really, of the USGA screwing up course setups, and you could say they did it again at Shinnecock Hills with some of the hole locations. Phil Mickelson took it out on the USGA. I hate to see that for the game of golf. I hate to see that for the USGA, and the players look bad too. But I also think that the players that win US Opens, they're used to, they almost want to see something like that that's so challenging that it, and you saw Koepka dissect the field the way Nicklaus did before the tournament by saying, this guy, you just automatically throw out half the field because they're not good enough. You automatically throw out the next half because they're going to complain about it. And it dwindles down to just there's not 156 players in there that can win this U.S. Open. There's 20 to 25. And you have to be so strong mentally. You have to overcome adversity. You have to overcome a setup you might not like, a condition when it got windy, when kite won, that you may not see coming. You better be prepared for everything.
Yeah, I agree. And I was just curious, you mentioned Koepka and his chance at history and what a distraction it's going to be and how difficult it's going to be mentally. He might be just a guy to mentally handle all that, but I was just curious if you thought how much the traveling across time zones and taking at least 2 or 3 days to reacclimate to the West Coast, how much that was going to play into a factor.
Well, if you look at this field, there's actually a very good field plan this week in Canada. Dustin Johnson, Koepka, like you said, McIlroy, that like to play the week before to stay tournament ready. And I don't think that 4-hour flight for these guys. They're all flying on their own airplanes or privately.
Yeah.
They're going to get into Pebble Beach on Sunday night. They'll be fine by Tuesday. They'll be acclimated to the time change. So these guys do this for their living. That, I think that's the least of the issues. I think what they're going to have to figure out is in the short time frame. And it's a lot of the top players will go make a visit. Cantley, like we said, was there this week. Tiger a couple weeks ago. And they want to play practice rounds where it's not a 7-hour or 6-hour practice round where players are hitting 20 shots on every hole.
Right.
But they need to get out there and see what the ball is going to do when it lands in a fairway. And let's just take, say, a hole like number 3, where typically, a player can hit a drive that lands 250 to 270 yards in the air and it stops before it crosses a fairway and goes into the bunkers, or they have to turn it around the bunkers. They have to figure out how far that ball is going to run, and will the longest players take a stab at driving the par 4 fourth, and just kind of getting used to that. The fairway, the biggest change I've seen so far is the fairway on number 8, which is maybe the most recognized par 4 on the golf course because of the second shot over the cliff there. But there's an aiming rock. The players have always hit right over when they're playing in the AT&T. Now that rock is a painted white rock that is now the left edge of the fairway, or even in the left rough. So now players are going to have to hit the ball 20 to 30 yards right of where they normally do. And that cliff's edge, the fairway goes right up the cliff's edge, is closer to the golfer. It's more sloped from left to right. So they're going to be coming into the green with a longer club and from a different angle than they normally do. And that green is, I believe I saw a stat that it's the second or third smallest green on the golf course. Number one, number 11 is the smallest. Number four is the second smallest. And then when you're hitting a 5 or 6 iron into this eighth green, it's hard to hit that green. So that's what the players are going to have to contend with. Fairway line on 11 has moved way over to the left. They're going to battle with two new greens. The greens have been redesigned on 13 and 14, allowing hole locations for the players. It, much fairer, but also, again, a thing that might take some getting used to.
Well, we're just about up against it. Brad, I want to thank you for carving out a piece of your day for us this early this morning. We're really looking forward to the coverage, and I also want to congratulate you and the team, because I think the Fox coverage has been so good as it's gotten or been in quite some time. So congratulations on the awesome work you guys are doing.
Yeah, thanks. Listen, this is year 5. We stumbled out of the block. I think any big network would have had trouble at Chambers Bay with that golf course, but we're excited. We can't wait. We got a great team, and I'm proud to be part of it.
Yep.
Well, looking forward to it, Brad.
Looking forward to it. Thanks for your time,
guys.
Brad.
All right. Talk to you soon.
Take care. All right, that was Brad Faxon, multiple PGA Tour winner, unlike any of us, listening to On Par with
Anthony. Between the three of us, we have 8 PGA Tour wins, so that's
absolutely
pretty good.
All right, folks, that's it for this week. Have a great week.
One stop gospel celebration.